storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's your brother, Vladimir Deese. Welcome to this episode of the Class War Battlefield Podcast. How y'all doing? So, we are young. Yeah, I remember my parents telling me, one day you'll wake up and you'll realize that you're in your mid-30s, and you'll look back and you'll say, where the heck did the other 15 years go? And at the time, when my mother told me this, she was not quite 40. She had several years to go before she'd be 40. But she said it goes quicker than you think. And to any person under the age of 25 listening, if there's anybody under the age of 25 listening, there's truth in that. I also remember when I was researching social control and what have you. One of the social scientists saying, you have to understand how the people at the top of the society work. They have a game plan 30 to 40 years out, what they'd like to see happen. Doesn't always work, but at least with such a plan, all they have to do is make slight adjustments. The 60s was not foreseen because their game planning strategies at that time weren't as good as they became, or so he believed. World War II wasn't foreseen at that time because, again, but then again, neither was World War I, the stock market crash of 1929, the Great Depression. What Jimmy Carter called the crisis of democracy, that wasn't foreseen. Hip-hop, the evolution of hip-hop, the Million Man March. If you don't get what I'm doing here, oh yeah, the women's liberation that came out of the civil rights movement, although there has been some interesting work done on the role of the CIA and possibly fomenting that, which, as hard as it may be to hear, because, you know, most of the people who listen to this are white, I see the connection between the civil rights movement, Black Lives Matter, and then the coming up of White Lives Matter after that, and then the Me Too movement. So, know, history may be repeating itself, but the point is this. This social scientist, many social scientists, believe that the upper crust of Anglo-European or Eurasian society is so powerful, you know, they're godlike, that they can manipulate the forces of mankind and humanity with their minds. That they are such great and glorious people that they can control the world as far out as 40 years. That's how good they are. And yet, all of these things happened, including the 1970s economic turmoil, which almost caused the United States to lapse into another depression. We forget about that. Their planning skills suck, is what I'm saying. They set up what I have talked to you about before, the Consumer Republic, after World War II. Which, within 20 years, so isolated teens from families that you had the counterculture movement, which sought to overturn it because it was so debasing and so soul-sapping. I often wonder if that's what actually led to the, well, I don't really wonder it, but there seems to be suggested that it is the soul-sapping emptiness of the Consumer Republic that led to the Christian fundamentalism, which sprung up in the late 60s into the early and mid-70s. The second, what I like to say, go round, because of my Southern heritage, of this, of implementing this Consumer Republic, was after the problems, the economic problems of the 1970s. That was the 1980s. TV helped with this one. But the isolation created in the 80s led to the grunge movement in the 90s. None of this was foresaw or was foreseen. None of it. Now, I've spoken with you before about the idea of the millennials and how they are a shifting demographic. They have never, the people creating these little names have only recently started calling millennials a group of people that was born around the millennium. Prior to 2010, when I first started hearing the word, the term millennials, which really was around, I want to say 2007, 2008, the people who talked about millennials would say that millennials were considered anybody born, which I found this interesting because I didn't know a group I was part of, was 1980 to 2010 or to 1980 to the year 2000. And then they would always say, well, then we'll create something else for, you know, 2000 to like 2020. But now the demographic has shifted so that it is no longer 1980 to 2000 or 2010. Now it seems to be around 1990 to 2020 or 2015 or 2010 or whatever. This is actually important because what I'm quickly starting to see is that for what they are calling the millennials, how they first described it, that 30-year swath of that 30-year period from 1980 to 2010, and even furthermore, the second, you know, adjustment from 1990 to 2020. The reason why we are in the mess that we are in right now is because there is no plan. And there has never been a plan. I was listening to an interview the other day, which they were talking about this group of millennials, which are now entering the workforce, that are the largest force in the history of the country. They're bigger than the baby boomers. And I thought back to myself, wait a minute, haven't I heard this before? Yes, I did. There was a guy who wrote a book on generations back in the late 1990s. It came out right around the time when I was set to graduate, which was the year 2000. And I watched a C-SPAN interview with the man talking about the political leanings of generations. And he was talking then about my graduating class. And I believe it was him who actually, this might have been the first time that I heard the term millennial, but in passing. Because he said, we don't have a real name for the people graduating now, but I just call them the millennials, or somebody called them the millennials. And he said, the people who are pretty much graduating the year 2000 and who graduated 1999 and all, you know, 2001, 2, 3, and 4, he goes, what we're finding is they have, and I've talked about this, they have a left of their parents' political philosophy. They have a left of their parents' political philosophy. And we're finding this for basically the last 5 or so years. No matter how many times we are talking to these young people, we keep seeing left, 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 which means the country is headed for a left turn as they become enfranchised and begin to vote more and more and more. Now, isn't this funny? Is this not, this was being discussed in the year 2000. I was about to graduate. I can still remember. Might have been right after I graduated. But considering what has happened over the last 18 years, you'd be hard-pressed to believe that. You would think that conservatism ruled the landscape. When all the polling they were doing, and what that should tell you, ladies and gentlemen, is that a lot of the polls that you see on television aren't the ones that really matter. The ones that you see on television are there to give you a false impression. Because this man was talking about polling data. You know, I never understood why you would spend $100,000 to poll and hopefully get 2,000 people to give you answers. Or why you would spend $1.5 million to maybe get 5,000 people to give you answers so then you could take that and spread it across the country. That's insane. No. You spend $2 million, $1 million, $500,000 to poll 10 or 20,000 people, maybe more. Well, let me get back on track. We have had a right-wing turn. How did it happen, though? It is pretty obvious that what 9/11 was used for, whatever your belief is of the situation, I happen to believe that it's not what we were told it was, but that's neither here nor there. Essentially, what happened to this country was we froze in place. And particularly for my generation, for my little group of people, from the mid-90s to the mid-2000s, it froze us in that 10-year period and pushed us to the right when we were supposed to go to the left. It pushed us to the right when we were supposed to go to the left. We have been, I would even probably say that for people my age, because I want you to really think about this. If you were in your mid-30s, they didn't talk about your political viability in your early 20s. And yet, right now, that is all the rave. They're talking about the people in their mid-20s, their early 20s, and their late teens becoming politically active. They didn't talk about that with you. And when they did, it was always in passing. Now, granted, with us, it was Bill Clinton, which, you know, that was supposed to be the young people's candidate. And then 9/11 happened. And we were all supposed to be good little boys and girls and follow whatever the president and the oligarchy said. But in the process, we were disempowered. And we were kept frozen in time. So we couldn't really exercise our political strength unless it was to the liking of the oligarchy. We didn't want to piss off the government or the oligarchy because 9/11, basically. And if you think that's exactly where we've been, this is exactly what's happened to us. And not many of us are having happen exactly what my mother said. We're waking up and realizing, whoa, we're in our mid-30s and things are getting bad. How did things get bad? And now we're pointing the fingers. Because we don't actually see what has been happening to us. We don't see what's actually been happening to us. We have been disempowered, my people. We have been made to feel as if politically we have no voice. They knew who we were. They knew what we were sent here to do, as they would say in the customs that my parents were bred in. And they had to stop it. See, they couldn't social engineer us out of it. They looked at grunge music. They looked at the hip-hop that was in vogue in the early 90s, they looked at R&B music, real R&B music. I'm talking Boyz II Men, Shy, things like that. And they said, there is a real factor to these people where they want reality, which is connected to community, which is connected to healing community, which is connected to healing family. We can't sell that. Grunge music is telling us that young people are not happy with consumerism. That they're not happy with the lives that their parents are living. I remember seeing specials on TV where they were talking about the messages of grunge music. There's a book called Home Alone America that I have, which could have been plucked. I think in the book they actually talk about grunge music. It could have been plucked completely out of the grunge scene. But these people looked at this. They studied it. Don't get it wrong, family. You don't understand the level in which these people want to control everything. But they can't, because human will is not as easily manipulated and conserved and controlled, as they believe. But to the extent that they want to control everything, they do extensive studying. They will take, and if you've ever seen Century of Self, this gives you an incredible view of it. Century of Self should be mandatory viewing for everybody. They will take 1,000 songs and take 100 researchers and pay them to go through them, figure out the structure of it, so that they can manipulate that structure for consumerism. This is how sick these people are. And again, I wonder sometimes, because it might just be the machine going. You get in the machine, you don't even realize it. But grunge music was a rejection of the glitz and glam of the 80s. And of the fundamental value system that was imposed to maintain that glitz and glam. And this scared the hell out of them. You had a group of people who were searching, who told them time after time that they wanted a better identity. Now today we use identity in a different way. It's something that can be detached and manipulated. But back then an identity wasn't that. An identity was something that was to be proud of. That was to be uplifted. That was to connect you to a tradition. That's what an identity was. So your family's identity was important to you. This is just 20 years ago, ladies and gentlemen. Your community's identity was very important to you. You still see this, actually, with, like, Asians. Asians have an incredible respect for their cultural identity. Today, it's like, oh, well, I want to change my identity like I want to change my pants, so I'm going to change it. They couldn't sell it. And they knew from the research they had done, and you don't get scared if you're just talking to 1,000 kids. You got to be talking to 1 million kids. You have to be looking at data from 2 million, 3 million kids over a 5-year period. That's how you get afraid of them becoming politicized. And through looking at that information, they realize, oh man, these people are really dissatisfied with consumerism. So we have to figure out a way to keep them immobilized for a while till we can implement the social restructuring plan that we're creating. And that actual social restructuring plan started with the takeover of the media in the mid-90s. the complete reworking of music immediately. You saw it within 2 years. The grade, the depth of the music changed from 94 to 96. And again from 96 to 98. But within 2 years of them taking over, it was different. So 95 to 97, you seen music that could not get played on the radio prior to them taking over, then being played and touted as great music. Social engineering and social structuring. They needed time, though, for it to take place, and they needed time for it to sink in. They knew that they couldn't change particularly the political strivings of that generation. They knew that. But that wasn't what they were shooting for. This is where long-distance planning comes from, comes into it. They were aiming for the generation that generation was going to start to groom. The problem is, because they are horrible planners, and they don't understand as much as they think they do, hubris, they didn't see the 2007 collapse coming, they didn't see Donald Trump coming. If you believed them, they didn't see Barack Obama coming, but actually I think they orchestrated Barack Obama. They didn't see a lot of things coming. They did see the rise of China coming. They've been talking about that for the last 30 years. But they didn't have a plan for the society, except for give me more and rob everything that isn't nailed down. And rob everything that isn't nailed down. Now this isn't giving us I don't want to give us a reason to feel sorry for ourselves, because that's not what this is. I don't want us feeling sorry for ourselves. I want you to understand why it is that you're in the situation that you're in. See, if you don't use willpower, and you don't understand willpower, then it's likely you will give your willpower to somebody else, and they will use it in a way that is destructive to you. Willpower is powerful. Which, you know, I was listening to another lecture, this was a couple of years ago, and like right in the middle of it, just out of nowhere, kind of, the man starts talking about willpower in psychology. And he says, and then leaves it, like just drops it and leaves it alone. He says, why is it that in psychology they never talk about willpower, but they talk constantly about the ego? Is it possibly that some of the times when they are saying ego, they actually mean willpower? Because psychology never talks about willpower. They just talk about ego all the time. It's always about defeating ego or deflating ego. Like when they say you have a authority problem. When they say you have an authority problem, they're talking about willpower. They're talking about the fact that you don't want to give up your willpower to somebody else and walk the line that that person tells you to walk, because you feel like you have the right to be able to decide your own life. That's a whole different thing. Now, we're raised in a society which would say, well, you know, you have to work, and so you do have to, in some ways, give up your willpower to that. Absolutely. But the question is, To what extent? To what extent? If you give up your willpower consistently and constantly, then you will create a situation where there will be a generation which may, in the forefront of their mind, say, I can't give up my willpower to this person, but they are controlled by their subconscious mind, which says, for the last three generations, everyone's given up their willpower, so why stop now? And they could give up their willpower to somebody who is absolutely disgusting, which will do great harm to you, your community, your family, and your nation. And that's something that I worry about. Because us having been frozen for the last 15 or so years, those of us now in our mid-30s, us not having the vocabulary to pull ourselves out from the mess that we are in, or even to describe the mess that we're in, I think we're heading for a fall. Because as we thaw, it's kind of, you know, a couple of years ago I was doing some reading on thawing emotions and thawing psychological trauma. And when it happens, it's painful. When it begins to really happen, it's painful. And you become lost in that pain. And that's why they often say you have to work with somebody to get through it. Because if you don't, it's likely you will become stuck in the pain. And as you try to back your way out of it, you'll create more pain. So you need someone there to guide you through it, to pull you through it. It's, you know, it's sometimes a year to 2 year process. That's a hell of a, you know, 12 to 24 months in a sort of emotional unthawing, which I've done, is difficult. It's difficult. And if you don't have someone guiding you through it, it's like, I like to describe it as, it's like having open heart surgery while you're still functioning. So you're still going around and doing everything that you're doing. And it is, it's very much like that. And if you don't know what you're doing, you could easily hemorrhage just by getting up in the morning. And this is kind of the state in which we've been in. And so now you see a lot of young people coming together. And it's funny because I keep saying young people when I want to say people in their mid-30s. But I really do think we're still young at heart. Because we've been waiting for our turn to guide and to govern. And we're seeing a lot of 35 to 40-year-olds waking up politically for the first time in their lives. And we're all ready to make mistakes. And since nobody... And the reason why we're ready to make mistakes is because nobody told us what to do. Our parents back in the 90s were telling us to behave ourselves. And since nobody is specifically talking to that group of people, this recent movement to like to reboot and to bring all these old shows back from the 90s basically is telling us that this group of people is starting to wake up and that the pollsters are getting concerned. They're trying to put us back to sleep. Nobody wants to talk to us or talk about us because they know what is in our memories. Because they had polled us and they had said, I remember they were talking about this in 2001, that we had, and they couldn't explain this. This was the summer, the late summer of 2001, before September 11th. They were talking about the political leanings of this generation, which would of the generation at the time, which would be in a few years graduating from college. And what they were finding was a social democratic leaning in the young people, and they couldn't figure out why. So they had prescribed that in the next 4 years, so this was 201, so they were looking 201 to 205, maybe to 206, that as these individuals became politically active, there would be a social democratic mandate. What was then, they asked at the time, what was then expected to happen with neoconservatives? Well, it may have been, I remember this like it was yesterday, it may have been that the neoconservatives' time was up. And that there was going to be a reversion back to the politics in form, not necessarily in protest, of the 1960s. And they couldn't figure out where this was coming from. How was it that the generation held such radical viewpoints when they knew, obviously, they didn't say this, the schools weren't teaching it, the state of the family probably wasn't teaching it, and since young people weren't reading as much, they knew they weren't reading about it, and yet there it was. And yet, there it was. What helped them push past us, other than 9/11, was the fact that we didn't have the lexicon and the political education to really put our will into effect. This is why, may I say, they are keeping a lid on who we are. And why they just want to talk about young people under the age of 25. Because the true power isn't those young people. Mm-mm. The true power is us. Now, it's not about us fighting young folk. It's about, for the first time in our lives, us standing up, learning what we learn about politics, and putting it into practice. That's what it's about. Whether we have to take positions on school boards, we have to take positions on cooperative boards, we have to take positions in Congress, whatever. We have to first describe our will before we can actually get it done. Conservatives have understood this. Those of us who seek to make a better society, and we don't have long. I believe because they interrupted what we were supposed to do, that's the reason why we're in the crap that we're in now. But we don't have long. We have to do this. Now, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, man, let me know. But when you know that you've seen, I believe this is what's happening. Where a government lies to a people. Thanks for listening. And a country is, I'll see you next time. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again, how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun, or a brick, or a stone, and they're alone.